So good morning, everyone. I hope you can hear me fine. So in the next 60 to 75 minutes, I'm going to introduce you in the cool world of Azure Site Recovery. Now, Azure Site Recovery, as you can guess from the name of the technology itself, first of all, it runs in Azure. It's the Microsoft Cloud technology. And it's helping you, it's providing a solution towards disaster recovery. Now, to make sure that everybody who's following here from wherever in the world you are, I'm going to start with a small introduction on what exactly is disaster recovery. Then followed by a little bit of, I could say, history, but it's not only history. It's also about how are we as partners, maybe you as an IT guy in your own company, how are you using Microsoft Disaster Recovery solutions today? And I'm not even talking about Azure in this scenario. And then, pretty obvious, the major part of the session will focus on Azure Site Recovery. Now, I call it in-depth, although I have to be honest, it's not really in-depth as such, in a sense that I'm not coaching you through all the configuration steps. However, I prepped my demo environment, and I'm going to coach you in the basic steps. And honestly, in depth in regards to Azure Site Recovery, you'll find out that it's actually possible in less than an hour to actually build your Azure Site Recovery environment and perform a full recovery of an on-prem virtual machine. So with that, maybe a small introduction about myself. So besides my 5-9 sidekick activity, as I like to call it, I'm mainly known as a Microsoft infrastructure expert. So my background is the pure IT pro guy. So I don't do any development, although I know that the DevOps is becoming more and more important. So integrating your IT pro expertise and relying a bit on development skills to create your custom scripts, for example, to start thinking about managed services and so on. I'm also pretty active as a Microsoft certified trainer, providing training and workshops all over Europe. And out of my social community activities, I've been recognized by Microsoft as an MVP for the last 3 years, of which the last few weeks as an Azure MVP. And out of my MCT, I'm running a European network of Microsoft trainers, which is pretty interesting to get a good view on the European markets, not only on training, but also how, for example, Microsoft technologies are being adopted in other regions outside of Belgium. And then the last one, it's a little bit outside of my professional business. It's more in my free time. I'm writing white papers, writing technical books, and so on. So my life is a little bit Microsoft oriented, as my wife likes to call it. Now, talking about my books and Azure Site Recovery, the ones who know me know that I live by the community. So I want to share my expertise, my knowledge. And to help you a little bit with that, I'm providing 50% discounts on a Hyper-V book that I wrote beginning this year. And it's all not only about Hyper-V, it's the logical way of implementing Hyper-V in your network. So it starts with Hyper-V, building a Hyper-V cluster, integrating with Virtual Machine Manager, then obviously integrating with Azure as well. So if you're interested, sorry, in that book, do not hesitate to use the discount code. Then you can get a book for not even 20 euro. And then another opportunity that I have for you. So if you're really interested after this session to learn all the ins and outs of Azure Site Recovery, I published a 2-day Azure Site Recovery course through Obscility. It's an external partner providing online and classroom training. Although it's a 2-day classroom training, you can attend the full session online in not even 2 hours. And the training itself is not only a video training, there are also a full lab guide that's pre-configured that actually allows you in, I could say, half a day. So let's say tomorrow morning. Saturday, it's weekend. What else do we have to do? So you log on to Obscility, you buy my Azure Site Recovery course, and you can use it 30 days for free when you take a yearly subscription. So it's like 1/12 of the full yearly price. Now, I know you're waiting for the technical part, but there's one small last marketing component that I'd like to mention. As I said in my introduction, I live by the community, and out of my community involvement, I actually started my own little small community. It's called Tag at Yellow Pants Team. By the Tag at Yellow Pants Team, as some of you, some Microsoft people might know, Tag at has been the place to be all over Europe and in the US. It's a huge Microsoft conference. And after a couple of years, when I attended the conference, started working at the conference and even presenting, I actually met so many great people from Microsoft, from the community, that we decided to build our own little small community. And community lives by shouting out on the internet. So anyone during the session, or even afterwards during the recording, if you send a tweet using Azure Site Recovery, PDTIT, and the hashtag tag at Yellow Pants Team, you can get the previously mentioned Hyper-V book for free. So with that, I think it's about time we skip the marketing part and we move over to the technology. And I'm going to introduce you in the concept of disaster recovery. Now, when I talk to customers, to partners about disaster recovery, when you go out to a customer, or if you're again working in your own environment and you go to your management and you ask them, hey, this particular application, do you want to have it available? They always go like, yeah, of course. And then you show them the full picture of the environment and all the components that you need. And they go like, maybe it's not that important anymore. Now, to make sure that you understand the concept of disaster recovery, I always like to compare it with an easy solution. It's a light. Everybody needs light to work. And especially in Belgium, when it's raining a lot of time, then we rely on our light bulbs. Now imagine you're in a room and it's getting pretty dark because the light is out. In a lot of situations, the reaction is panic. Now again, think about your IT environments. You have your servers, your applications, your switches, your storage, and one of those components go down. In a lot of situations, it's panic in the IT department and mainly in the management department and specifically for the users. Now again, talking about a light bulb, the solution is pretty easy. It's called a light switch. And we all know you have the light switch, you turn it on again, and if everything goes fine, light is back and all our environments are up and running. And I know that disaster recovery is a lot more complex than just using a light switch to turning on or off the light. But by using Azure Site Recovery, by implementing Site Recovery, I could say by a press of a button, your disaster recovery environment can be up and running. So with that, just keep calm and rely on Azure. Now, when talking about or thinking about disaster recovery solutions, disaster recovery in any IT environment, in a data center, even in a one single physical server environment, in a small SMB customer network, disaster recovery is nothing new. I mean, Azure is, again, it's nothing really, really new anymore. It's there for like 5 years already. But disaster recovery as such has been there since the early days of IT. We use one PC to make sure that when this one PC goes down, then we make sure that we just have a site PC available. And the same for firewall switches, storage components, building application clusters, building storage clusters, and so on. Now, in whatever environment you're using, whether it's a real environment, a virtual environment, if you're using Microsoft solutions only or any other technology that you can think of, in a lot of those cases, it's pretty, pretty complex. Now, some common familiar disaster recovery solutions is we have one data center. Yeah, easy peasy, we just built a second data center. And then by using any technical component that we can use that we have available. For example, we're going to use stretch clusters. So we have a couple of physical servers, maybe virtual machines, in one side of our data center. And by using clustering, by using storage replication, by using virtual machine replication, we're going to make sure that those machines can fail over to the second data center. Then there were some dependencies or sites solutions available, like active passive failover, where everything is running in one data center. And as long as everything is okay in that one data center, then we're actually not using the second data center. Now, the downside from the management perspective is we actually have to pay for our second data center because it's there, it's consuming power, it's consuming computing resources. There's someone managing that network, those storage components, and so on. Then from another technical angle, some solutions when thinking, for example, about SAN replication, storage area network replication, when you start with a solution from vendor one, most obvious, you need to stay with the same vendor when moving to the second data center. And even within the same vendor solution, sometimes it's not that easy when you're like upgrading your storage, expanding your storage, or again, if you're expanding something on the left side, then obviously you want to make sure that you do the same expansion on the second data center. And then again, cost is again another important aspect. And then some companies are not that happy when all the data is in the same location, and I mean location like a region or a country. So why not making our disaster recovery solution even more intelligent by, for example, replicating between countries? An easy example, I'm using a data center in Belgium and I'm replicating data to the Netherlands, for example. Now, all those solutions are great. I mean, a lot of our customers, and even talking about myself a couple of years ago, I did quite a lot of those implementations. Now, although they sound cool and they provide every uptime we need, they're very effective, but in a lot of situations, actually bloody expensive. Not only expensive to require them, but also expensive to manage them, to control them, to maintain them. So although it's a great solution, there are some more negative points. And then, as I already mentioned, in a lot of those cases, it's a little bit tied to the hardware vendor. I'm talking about storage replication. And then sometimes even, and that's actually the most important part, once everything is up and running, everything is being replicated and so on, that's all fine. But what happens in case of a disaster? How does it work? Did we actually do the right testing to make sure that a failover is actually possible and so on? So in my opinion, disaster recovery provides you with a couple of challenges. Now, this is a really basic schema of our local environments, our on-prem IT platform, our own data center, where we have our IT infrastructure. And of course, we also have something that's called an end user. The end user logs on to his machine, connecting to the IT infrastructure backend and connecting to the applications. And then we're using an external disaster recovery solution. And we also have remote users connecting to our in-house data center environment. Then from the local environment, we replicate, we copy storage, we move virtual machines, we move our applications in an active or active passive setup to our second data center. And then something goes wrong. Our application goes down, a virtual machine goes down, a single physical machine in the data center goes down, and it's causing downtime for the users. And then from the disaster recovery scenario, when everything is working fine from a networking perspective, the data center is available, remap our users, remote users, to the second data center by using some public DNS namespace updates, for example. And then the internal users, instead of connecting to our internal server, which is not running anymore, they also have the option to connect to the second data center. Then thinking about latency, for example, that the application is not as performant as we are connecting as an end user when it's running in our own network local data center. And then a little bit worse, it's not only one application or one server going down, but for example, we're losing the full data center. So in that case, the solution, again, one of the options is pointing our users from our local network to the disaster recovery site, again, by using some networking updates, DNS updates, and the same for the public connected users. Then even in some cases, a disaster recovery solution might also be that instead of using our migrating our applications, relying on replication in the second data center and having users connecting from our local environments is actually not only moving the applications to the second data center, but also physically moving the users. So an easy example, when you have your own offices and somewhere in the basement, you have your data center fully equipped with power and everything. And what happens if your building gets fire? And maybe you're not even allowed to enter your building. Or maybe you're somewhere in the world where earthquakes are like common. And then something happens with your office, and then it's not even possible to actually walk into the office anymore because you don't have an office anymore. Then might be a good solution to migrate your users and have them connected directly to the second data center that's running somewhere in another part of the world. But still, it's quite challenging. Now, when thinking about disaster recovery, I think today is like the right day to reconsider your data center disaster recovery, set up your disaster recovery solution. So again, first of all, historically challenging with all the examples I already gave you. It's complicated to set up, it's complicated to manage, requires a lot of planning and design. What applications do we want to make available? What's the recovery time objective, recovery point objective, which are cool terminologies for management and project managers, vendor lock-in, and again, it's pretty or even bloody expensive. Now, why should you reconsider your disaster recovery today? Because it's a commodity solution that's available today. And not only as of today, it's been there for, again, I'm talking about Azure Site Recovery. It's been there for a few months already, using public cloud technology. The cloud is there. There are massive data centers all over the world. We all know that cloud technology provides you always on. The data centers are always available. And I know there's a side remark, you need to rely on your internet connection. But mainly, public cloud offering is available. And pinpointing the cost, we all know that cloud technology offers you the OpEx versus CapEx, where you're not investing upfront, you just pay as you use, which in a lot of cases is a lot cheaper than the expensive solution we used for a couple of years already. And just to make sure that all of you get it right, disaster recovery doesn't mean that you have your monthly maintenance plan for your servers, where you're running Windows updates, you reboot the server, and for whatever reason, power doesn't come up, the power supply doesn't work correctly, the physical disk crashes during the reboot, and so on. So having a maintenance plan, there's nothing wrong with that. I can only encourage you to actually have a maintenance plan in your environment, but that's not the full disaster recovery. Or a backup or a long-term data capture solution. Although again, having a backup already helps. I mean, if your data center blows up and you don't have any backup, yeah, then there's nothing to restore from. Now, even if you have a backup, restoring in case of a major incident in your environment, it might take you a few days, weeks, sometimes even months to make sure that you can restore to the same situation like the day the incident occurred. And then one of the remarks that I heard from one of my customers, I don't need disaster recovery. I blame it on the IT guy, where in this situation, I was the IT guy. When something goes wrong with the data center, with the application, No worries, we don't need any disaster recovery. I just call you on your mobile. I know you're providing a good service, and thank you for helping me out. So that is totally not the disaster recovery solution you're looking for. That was the intro on disaster recovery. So taking it one step further is talking a little bit about specific Microsoft disaster recovery solutions that are available today and in a lot of cases have been there for many, many years already. So a simple overview of any data center, again, can be a full data center, full redundant, can be like one or a couple local physical hosts, Hyper-V hosts, and underneath you're using computing power, storage power, and networking connectivity. And obviously, on top of that, we're running our applications, web servers, database servers. It's not that important what application we are running. When talking about the lowest level in our infrastructure, in a lot of cases, we rely on third-party storage replication. We're running one storage solution and replicating to a second storage solution. If we are using virtual machines, Hyper-V, then since Hyper-V 2012, and obviously 2012 R2, and most probably in the next version 2016, we will have Hyper-V replica. So we're replicating virtual machines from one Hyper-V host to the other. And then we're providing disaster recovery for all those virtual machines that are running inside my Hyper-V host. Or when thinking about the application, instead of creating a Hyper-V cluster, for example, we could rely on the built-in disaster recovery within the application itself, like, for example, Exchange Database Availability Groups that allow you to replicate, copy the database, the Exchange database files between different Exchange servers, as of Exchange 2010, 2013, and 16. And for example, SQL as another possible application, building web servers, using load balancing, all those technologies. And then maybe someone is already extending his own data center to Azure by using Azure Site Recovery Manager, which you already know will be my next part in the session. And then a combination, why not, between using Azure and using local Hyper-V replica. And then again, there they are, relying on backups. Worst case, if everything is away, then we still have something offsite and we can restore from our oh-so-loved tape drives. And then we then need like 1 week of time to restore the full environment. So thinking a little bit bigger, we start with local storage. And we build a Hyper-V failover cluster. So a couple of Hyper-V physical machines running virtual machines, and we rely on Hyper-V failover clustering. So while one Hyper-V host goes down, the other Hyper-V hosts take over. It's been there for a couple of years already. Or why not, again, using Hyper-V guest clustering. So building a SQL cluster inside our Hyper-V environment, or building an Exchange cluster. Hyper-V host 1 runs Exchange server 1, and Hyper-V host 3 runs a copy of Exchange server 2, and we rely on database availability groups. And then we integrate backup by using the Windows Server backup, for example, or the more advanced, more enterprise-oriented System Center Data Protection Manager to make sure that besides using our clustering, application clustering, or Hyper-V failover, we do have an offsite backup. Nothing wrong with that. Or even using Azure Backup or one of the latest updates, the Azure Backup Server, which is actually a 95, 99% copy of the System Center Data Protection Manager, but provided as a cloud service. So you have Azure as your storage environment. You install the Azure Backup Server in your local environment on a Windows machine. You create backup to disk in the exact same way as you've done for a couple of years already. Then, besides offloading the backup to disk copies to tapes, you can store those copies offline in Azure and then performing a restore out of Data Protection Manager locally, or even downloading the backup files from Azure and then restoring through the Data Protection Manager or through the new Azure backup server. So that's been published for about a month now in public general availability. So if you're interested in migrating your existing backup solution, integrating with Azure Backup, make sure you have a look at Azure Backup Server. And then again, taking the next step, managing, orchestrating, automating, if you want to call it like that, your physical Hyper-V. And that's where it really becomes interesting when talking about Azure Site Recovery. It's not only integrating with a Microsoft environment. So if you're running a physical environment, a Hyper-V based environment, or a VMware ESX, ESXi 5.1, 5.5 environment, it allows you to replicate data to Azure Site Recovery. So with that, I think it's about time I introduce you a little bit more in the cool world of Azure Site Recovery. So how does it work? Azure Site Recovery is a Microsoft cloud service. It's running in the Azure data centers. High available, always on, available anywhere in the world. It's an agent, it's a service, so there's some kind of Azure subscription involved. And in our local environment, in our primary site, our own data center, we have any possible way of infrastructure. We're using, for example, physical machines, running server 2012 R2. We're running Hyper-V 2012 R2, or VMware ESX, ESXi 5155. And the idea is that by using Azure Site Recovery, we're actually replicating data, virtual machines, applications that are running inside our virtual machines that are running on our physical machines, replicating the data directly to Azure virtual machines. So it's not only a stupid copy, it's even converting, for example, your VMware VMDK files, converting to VHD files, which are capable of running inside the Azure infrastructure. And the replication is secured. The data itself passing through the internet connection towards Azure is based on HTTPS encryption. So security is built in by default. And then one of the other options is that instead of using Azure as your disaster recovery environment, so not replicating data from your primary site into the Azure space, but using Azure as a control mechanism, as your disaster recovery framework, your policy framework, but still relying on storage replication by using Hyper-V replica, for example, or storage replication. And then the management, the control mechanism, the failover mechanism is driven out of your Azure Site Recovery plan that I will show you in the next couple of slides. So it's not only on-premises to Azure, it also allows you managing disaster recovery between two data centers, even different regions, different locations. It's not that important anymore. All management intelligence is driven out of Azure Site Recovery as the orchestrator. A couple of features about Azure Site Recovery as a service. First of all, it provides you automated virtual machine protection and replication. So it's relying on a replication mechanism. So all the data, all the changes that are happening in your local data center environment are being replicated in whatever way towards Azure Site Recovery environment. Another feature we have in the Azure portal is remote health monitoring. So for example, you log on to the Azure portal, and I promise you some demos later on at the end of my session. I will show you that any activity that's occurring inside the Azure Site Recovery space is being monitored. What happens with my servers? What if my replica is not fully up to date, and so on and so on. Then another one, near zero recovery point objective. So the RPO refers to what is the timestamp that allows me to recover from. When doing the basic configuration, Azure Site Recovery configures a replication state every 15 minutes. So this means that any updated state from your local environment gets replicated to Azure every 15 minutes. Now, for some organizations, although in my opinion, 15 minutes is already pretty cool, for some environments, the 15 minutes is not enough. With the latest update since a few weeks, it allows you to lower the RPO from 15 minutes to 5 minutes and even to 30 seconds. Now, from some technical implementation experience, the 30 seconds, you have to make sure that your internet connection has to make sure that, for example, you're running 50 virtual machines, that all those 50 virtual machine states actually can be synchronized, can be replicated to Azure every single 30 seconds. So that's just a side note. And then another interesting one is no impact recovery plan testing. Now, what this means is within the Azure Site Recovery, you build your environment, you install some agents. And again, I'll show you later on how it works. And then you can perform a full recovery plan failover test, actually without any production environment impact. So what this means is it's a one single button, recovery testing. You created your recovery plans, your failover policies, and it will create a dummy virtual machine in the data center, replicate it to Azure Site Recovery environments, shutting down that machine and starting up the machine in Azure. And then, for example, testing that the network connectivity is okay, site-to-site VPN between your environment and Azure is up and running, and actually users are capable of connecting to the recovered virtual machine in Azure without any impact on your production environment. And then the cool thing, and in my opinion, besides how easy it is to actually build and configure Azure Site Recovery, there's a really deep dive customization possible when thinking about your recovery plans. I'm going to talk a little bit about recovery plans later on, but just know that it's very, very customizable by creating graphical step-by-step scenarios. Make sure that all my machines in one site, my own data center, are being replicated. And then if something is wrong in my data center, start up all the replicated VMs in Azure. That's one recovery plan option. Second one is relying on automation, using Azure automation to perform certain activities, or creating your own custom scripts by, for example, using PowerShell. And then you can create any recovery plan you can think of. Then another interesting feature, minimal recovery time objective. Why? Because, again, it's based on replication. You already know that. By default, it's replicating every 15 minutes, which means if something goes wrong with my server in my local environment, I have a site copy available in Azure. I start up my machine in Azure, and it's already available. It's there. It's even tested during the Azure Site Recovery replication if the replication itself happens in a healthy state. Because otherwise, if you want to start up your virtual machine in Azure and there would be any corruption in the virtual machine, yeah, then your recovery is not really working. So Azure is also checking that one. And then another interesting one, replicating to Azure, which is the example that I've been talking about for the last 15, 20 minutes. But obviously, you can also recover from Azure. I mean, a lot of cases where Azure Site Recovery is implemented, you might even use it as, I don't know, an easy example to introduce Azure at one of your customers. So you might think that, for example, in an SMB environment, Azure is maybe a little bit of overkill. Yeah, but Azure Site Recovery is only one of those solutions. And then in case of a disaster, the customer is happy about the Azure Site Recovery functionality. And then maybe it's a lot easier to convince him about building the next virtual machine, not in his local environment anymore, but also in Azure. But again, in this case, it's mainly pointing towards the failover process. just make sure that there's no misconception that you push the data into Azure and you can never walk away from Azure anymore. I mean, there's no lock-in at all. And then, in my opinion, one of the most interesting ones, besides all the other disaster recovery solutions that exist today, it supports the mixed physical, mixed virtual environment between Hyper-V platforms and VMware-based platforms. Now, that all sounds good. I know some people think like, it's all cool and shiny, but it's probably not that easy to configure. Now, there's one simple table that I'm using to go through each and every step, and most probably after this slide, I dive into my live environments and actually walking you through the different steps. Now, the funny thing is that these seven steps are actually literally presented by Azure itself. So how does it work? First step is creating an Azure Site Recovery Vault. Now, obviously, you need to have networking connectivity to Azure. Your Azure subscription must be available. I mean, that's like obvious. We log on to the Azure portal and we create an Azure Site Recovery Vault. An Azure Site Recovery Vault is your organization specific secured encrypted environment linked to your Azure subscription, meaning it's only your organization when having the correct access keys that has a connection to the Azure Site Recovery environment. Once the Azure Site Recovery Vault is created, the next step is creating, in my example that I'll show you later on, creating a Hyper-V site. Now, a Hyper-V site is just a logical container where all your local Hyper-V servers that you want to replicate to Azure are classified. So you can build a Hyper-V site Belgium, a Hyper-V site Zaventem, for example, or even a Hyper-V site somewhere, wherever in the world, pointing to your logical physical location. Once your Hyper-V site is ready, Azure Site Recovery will present you a registration key and the Azure Site Recovery provider. So it's like a ASR agent that you install on your local Hyper-V server. During that setup, and I'll show you again in a couple of minutes, you upload the registration key, and out of the registration key, it will perform an HTTPS secured connection to the Hyper-V site in Azure Site Recovery. Then in the next step, we create a storage location and Azure Virtual Network. Why? Because first of all, we want to make sure that our replicated physical virtual machines from our own data center have some kind of storage location in the Azure data center. And then the next part, the Azure network, because if we want to start up our virtual machines, I mean, starting up the virtual machine is not really an issue, but we also want to make sure that we, as the IT guys, and most important, our end users, actually have a networking connection towards Azure. And then again, site-to-site VPN or ExpressRoute, the direct fiber connection to the Azure data center, is of course a site requirement. So in that case, everything is up and running. We have a connection between our Hyper-V servers and the Azure Site Recovery backend. And the next step is creating protection groups and building enabling protection for virtual machines. And it's just a wizard that I'll walk you through in the next couple of minutes. And then, as already mentioned, we can perform multiple test deployments, testing outside of my production environment, or even performing a full planned failover. Like there is some downtime during coming weekends, and I want to make sure that my recovery is fine. And then, of course, the unplanned failover, that's when disaster strikes. As a short wrap-up to make sure that you understand how easy it is, you have your Azure portal, you have the admin user within Azure, you log on and you create your setup. And then, as you can see from the screenshot, and it will be a lot more visible in the live environment, it's a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 step scenario. Creating the vault, downloading some agents, next, finish, and done. Then we are replicating our environment. Again, virtual machine manager, standalone Hyper-V servers or VMware or physical machines. and replicating data between Azure. Now, it all sounds too good, and I think time-wise, we got like 30 minutes left. So that gives me, I could say, 15 minutes for the demo and 15 minutes Q&A at the end. So I'm jumping to my local Hyper-V server. So I'm running Hyper-V 2012 R2, and I do have virtual machine running. Sorry for the green color, but just to show you that it's not my physical machine, it's a virtual machine. And in my Hyper-V portal, I have my another VM. It's just a virtual machine that's been running for a couple of hours. And I do have two virtual machines that are available, but for some reason they are not running. I'm not using them, so I'm just shutting them down. So it's a easy, simple Hyper-V environment. Then in the back, I have my Azure portal available. Now, for the ones who are already using Azure, depending on when you jumped in the Azure Adventure, it's or using the new portal, reachable through portal.azure.com. It's the one that has the nice colors, and it's providing you all the latest functionalities and features. Now, Azure Site Recovery has been integrated in Azure for about 2 years already, and it's still relying on the management from the old portal. Now, even if you start with the new portal, portal.azure.com, and you search for recovery services, it will automatically redirect you to the old portal. So it's not that important. Just know that it's available in the old portal. So the first step, going to the recovery services snap-in, and I did some pre-configuration, but not that important for the moment. I'm going to create an Azure Site Recovery Vault. So by using the built-in wizard, I'm going to create, let's say we are Friday ASR. And then selecting my Azure subscription. If it's an enterprise volume licensed agreement, then of course it will recognize this is just a demo environment. So creating the Azure Site Recovery Vault, I'm going to make sure that I press the button correctly, then it actually also does something. It's creating my Azure Site Recovery Vault. I'm just going to give it a couple of seconds to just show you how quick I hope it will run. And if it takes a little bit too long, then I'm just switching back to my already prepared Site Recovery Vault. Taking a little bit longer than expected. That's why we have our fallback plan. So the Azure Site Recovery Vault has been created. And as I already explained and showed you in a screenshot, once the Site Recovery Vault is configured, it's a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 step scenario. That's all it takes. But there's actually step 0, which is visible here, where you have to select your specific disaster recovery setup. And just for your information, the first one is between Virtual Machine Manager, System Center Virtual Machine Manager, and Azure. Between two virtual machine sites, so that's not relying on Azure as a data center for the replica. It's replicating between two sites directly. Between Hyper-V and Azure, that's the one I'm going to use in the rest of my demo. And then VMware physical machines and Azure. And then between two VMware sites and between virtual machines and a SAN area replication, if you're relying on storage. In this case, Hyper-V site and Azure, and creating the Hyper-V site, downloading the registry key, and so on. So I'm going to jump back, and in the meantime, the new created Site Recovery Vault is available, which helps because then I can walk you through step one, creating the Hyper-V site, which in this case is Zaventem. Shouldn't take that long, I hope, again. I'm going to remove some informational messages. Let's see, it should be there already. You can do it, come on, come on. A little bit faster. This, by the way, is one of the reasons why Microsoft was actually building a new version of the portal, which is a lot more responsive. So it might take some time, and again, if it's taking too long, then I'm just jumping back to the other. Not the most exciting part of Azure Site Recovery. Going back to my previous configuration, it seems to be an overall issue. Gonna let it run for a few minutes, not that important. I'll go back to my local Hyper-V box. And as I wanted to show you, but I already downloaded the information. So the technology itself is driven by the Azure Site Recovery Provider, which I like to call an ASR agent. It's something that you install on your Hyper-V machine. Now, one side note, if you are using the physical machines, if you are using a VMware-based environment, there is no agent to be installed on the physical or VMware box, but you need to install an additional Windows Server 2012 R2. And on that machine, you install the agent, and then the agent will talk with VMware, will talk with your physical infrastructure, and it will also perform your application. And then the second part, the ASR Vault, as it's called in my environment, it's your secured registration key. So how does it work? On your local machine, you start up the Azure Site Recovery setup, so the agent provider, specifying how you want to connect it to the internet by using a direct connection, HTTPS, or if you want to your proxy server. And then importing your registration key. I'm just going to show you the settings. I'm not going to import it again, and it won't work because it's already registered. But just to show you that the information is available, it shows you your subscription ID. So this points to your Azure subscription. So the pinpointing to your subscription, so the one that actually is costing the money. And then referring to the vault name. So nothing blocks you from creating multiple Azure Site Recovery vaults. And then, for example, creating a relation between your local Hyper-V machine 1 to ASR Vault 1 and a second Hyper-V host to another Site Recovery vault, for example. And then the third option, the Hyper-V site name, that relies to your created Hyper-V site name within Azure. And then it's next, next, finish. It takes a couple of minutes, and your local Hyper-V host is registered in Azure. This one is still running. Let's see if it comes back. And if not, then I can try to log on maybe again in the portal, but it's still up and running. That's cool. So, once your Hyper-V host is configured, so you install the ASR agent, perform the configuration after a few minutes, your Hyper-V host is visible in your Hyper-V site inside your ASR vault. So in this case, my machine is called MockLab 2, which is my, as you can see here in the top, it's my Hyper-V machine. So now I have a full integration between my Hyper-V host and my Azure environment. Let's see if I go back to my 1, 2, 3, 4, 5-step scenario, just to make sure that you can follow the steps. And if it's not coming back, then I'll just show you the different independent items. Okay, so then try it a little bit different. So once the server is recognized in Azure, in my 1, 2, 3, 4, 5-step scenario, the next step, so we're now in step three, is building a protection group. I'm not going to show you how easy it is to build a protection group. It's adding a protection group. Well, I could actually try to create one, not that important. Zaventem-vg. From my local environment, the target is Azure. Again, my subscription and my storage account. Now, in a protection group, That's actually the location where you specify your replication settings. So a copy frequency every 15 minutes, or as mentioned already in the slide deck, 5 minutes or up to 30 seconds. So this means that all virtual machines that are part of the replication protection group will try to replicate the data every 30 seconds, 5 minutes, or 15 minutes. And this is again where a little bit investigation, a little bit assessment and studying is needed, because maybe some applications are not that important, meaning some servers are fine in replicating every 15 minutes, and some other ones maybe every 30 seconds, like an accounting system, like a production database environment, and so on. So in that case, when there are different replication settings requirements, you automatically have to create different replication protection groups. Let's say 15 minutes. Then the recovery point between 0 hours and 24 hours. So this points to, I don't like to call it latency, but creating different versions of the replication. Then very, very interesting, frequency of application consistent snapshots. So for example, you're running a Hyper-V machine, a virtual machine running inside a Hyper-V host, and it's running SQL, SharePoint, Exchange, for example. Then Azure Site Recovery is also capable, but not only replicating the virtual machine state, but also the application state. And then the last one, and this is a stupid option, but it's pretty important, initial replication start time. This means when I press OK right now, then all my virtual machines that are part of my protection group will immediately replicate. Now it's like 11 o'clock here in Belgium, middle of the day. So in my setup, I could, for example, configure to start the replication tonight at 11 p.m. and then using the full weekend, sorry, to replicate my data. I'm not going to save my protection group because I already have another one available. So in my What I do have now is my server, my Hyper-V site with my Hyper-V host, and my protected items, my protection group. And then inside my protection group, I have my selected virtual machines. So as you can see here, it's enabling the offline just the VM virtual machine for protection. I'm not going to wait for that. Will probably take a couple of minutes. No, not that important. Now, one interesting button I have here available underneath is the failover or the test failover. So I'm not going to perform the full failover, but as already mentioned in the slide deck, I can perform a test failover. And then pointing to an Azure virtual network to make sure that when the replicated virtual machine starts up in Azure, it actually has full networking connectivity. Now, taking one step further is building my recovery plans. In my recovery plan, I'm going to actually build my step-by-step walkthrough scenario. These are all the activities that need to happen during the failover. I'm going to call this one the PDT recovery plan from local environments to Azure. And for this replicated machine. So if the other machines, the just the VM and the other one, would have been replicated already, they would be part of this protection group as well. It only take a couple of seconds. I need to wait for this one because I want to show you the next part. There we go. In my recovery plan, and again, this is your intelligence, if you want to call it like that, of your recovery plan. So the basic structure is all groups shut down, meaning one group is your local environment, your protection group with, in this case, one virtual machine. The next part is all groups failover, so performing the failover to Azure, and then the start activity. Now, this is pretty basic structure. I mean, there's nothing really, really intelligent in those levels. But underneath here, I have my different action buttons. So I can create multiple groups, up to 7 groups. I can integrate scripts and perform manual actions. So for example, the first part is execute a shutdown in my local environment. And the next step, run some scripts before the shutdown or after the shutdown. So for example, before the shutdown, an interesting script could be that right before the shutdown, I don't know, I receive an email that my virtual machines were actually shut down correctly, or even a text message or something like that. Or before the shutdown, execute a PowerShell script that copies some important database file, some PDF documents from one shared folder to another location, or anything else that you can think of. And then the same goes during the failover. Again, building availability groups. For example, the availability group, it's a logical collection of machines that need to replicate in the same failover process. So an easy example, you're running a web server, an application server, and a database server in your local environment. During the failover, you might, for example, configure an availability group that whenever one of those three servers need to perform a failover to Azure, that the other two machines are also part of the same failover process. Because otherwise, for example, let's say your web server is performing a failover to Azure, then the web server in your local environment goes down. Your application relies on the web server in Azure. Then connecting to the application backend, connecting to the database backend, it still needs to send the traffic through the Azure side-to-side VPN to your local environment, which again might create some confusion in the network topology, might create some latency. Then again, scripts and manual actions. So a manual action, last example, could, for example, be perform the shutdown in my environment, and then wait for the admin user to press the button to continue the failover process. So that the failover, although it's possible to run automatically, that for some reason a human being wants to stay in control and we actually have to press a button. And then the last one, performing the failover, a planned failover or unplanned failover. A planned failover, as I hope you can understand, is I want to perform a failover, but in a controlled manner. So like next week, Monday and Tuesday, there is, I don't know, electricity downtime in my data center, plant downtime. I'm going to perform a full failover during the weekend already to Azure. And once the electricity comes back up in my data center on Tuesday evening, I perform a full failback. Or obviously the unplanned failover, there's a fire in my data center, networking connectivity is down, and I'm going to force Azure to perform an unplanned failover. Now, what's the technical difference between planned and unplanned? In a planned failover, during the site recovery, Azure will verify the machine state, meaning as long as the two machines, the two environments, local and Azure, are fully in a healthy replication state, then Azure will perform the failover. However, in a situation where the replication is not healthy, not up to date, due to latency, due to some unplanned shutdown of the virtual machine in our local environment, then Azure will not perform a check on the virtual machine state in Azure and not blocking the failover, which of course is your unplanned failover. So in this case, my virtual machine planned failover from my environment to Azure. And I'm gonna start it. There was an error for that machine. It's not important because that's not running anyway. And the planned failover is in progress. Now this might take some time, but I think we are pretty good on timing. So the planned failover is in process. I talked a little bit in the key reasons for using Azure that there is monitoring involved. So as you can see, it's starting up my protection group activity. It's creating the environment. So what it's now doing is replicating the last information from my local machine to Azure. And depending on the updates, this might take some time. Then shutting down my machine in my local data center, performing the failover, starting up the VM in Azure, and my machine should be available. So I could wait for this and waiting for the sequence. Now in meantime, I'm gonna show you some other monitoring snap-in. So by going to the jobs section here in the top or even the events, I got a full view of all activities that happened in the last, in this case, 7 days in my environment. So creating protection groups, deleting servers, creating sites, all the information is there. Even if everything is okay, like in a complete state, or like in this situation, something is wrong, then by selecting that one line, it gives me more detailed information on why something was wrong. So in this case, some failed protection group, error details, and it gives me detailed information regarding that specific error. And this one, for example, could be used to go out to the internet, the TechNets, or Azure documentation and searching for the specific error message. So let's see where we are. It's still in progress. Already at step three. So we are past the group shutdown. So if all goes fine, my virtual machine on my Hyper-V host is effectively shut down. Now, one thing I can show you from here is the replication health, where you can, from your local Hyper-V environment, you can actually follow the latest replication cycle. So the last cycle was like a couple of seconds ago, which is normal because he's trying to replicate the latest machine state. We're gonna wait a little bit more for the recovery plan. Not really exciting watching some dots passing by. This might be a good time to check if there are any questions in the Q&A. So I give you like maybe 5 minutes already for posting some urgent questions. It gives me some time to wait for the machine failover. Don't be afraid to ask questions. The idea is that you learn something out of the session. If you like the session, you can also just type, I like the session. It currently no immediate question, so I'm just gonna jump back. Thank you. Just gonna jump back to my Azure, taking a little bit more time, but let's see what's happening in background, if it's already starting up or building my virtual machine. No, it's not there yet. Gives me some time to clean up my demo environment already. Still in progress. Yep, it's one step further. So now it's starting up my virtual machine. So apparently, during the last run of the machine, which was in my case, my testing yesterday evening, it needed to replicate a little bit more data than expected. Sorry if it becomes a little bit boring, but it's part of my failover process. So in your production environment, you're like the nervous, anxious IT guy waiting for, oh, come on, please start up the virtual machine, please start up, and then I know that my users are happy. And we all know that IT guys are not that patient, so I'm gonna jump back to my virtual machine. Still not visible. Let's see where we are. I know the portal is getting crazy because I'm jumping around like hell. Building the virtual machine state. And then starting up. It will just take a few minutes more, I'm afraid. Let's check on the questions again. Okay, so there's one remark. We plan to test Hyper-V replication between server this weekend already. That's cool. Did you make your decision based on the session or already before? Can you maybe type some feedback in the chat box? I hope I encourage you during the session, but that would be really awesome. I did a test 2 days ago. Okay, and how did it go? Perfect. Well, I'm not providing free services, but my email address is shared anyway. So just feel free to send me an email if it was working fine during the weekend. It's always nice to hear that the technology that I'm presenting is actually also working and not only in my demo environment. Yeah, I'm just joking. I mean, it's not only in my demo environment that it's running. Check back, it's still starting up, so apparently it needs to replicate a lot of data. Let's check on virtual machine level. Still doing something, but okay, completed. Cool. Some other thing that I want to show you, otherwise I might forget, is when you configure your site recovery, selecting your virtual machines, it will actually try to map your local virtual machine specifics to an Azure virtual machine. In my case, I'll show you. So in my case, I'm running a really, really small VM. It's just a demo machine, one CPU, and close to 4 GB of RAM, which Azure maps to one of his virtual machine T-shirt sizes, if you can call it like that. So for some reason, I don't know why, probably made the selection yesterday, and that's probably one of the reasons why it's taking a bit longer. So, for example, although I have a really small machine in my environment, when replicating to Azure, so the virtual machine that's starting up in Azure, and 14 gigabytes of memory. This is just for demo purposes. Now, the advantage could be that from, I know it's not the best remark, but from a marketing sales perspective, your server might even be more performant in Azure than it's running locally. A little bit with the technology here. But let me give you the other example, which is actually used more in production. During my slide deck, I talked about the complexity and cost of the existing disaster recovery solutions, where I think, first of all, I showed you that there's not a lot of complexity in building site recovery, maybe besides thinking about your recovery plan in a little bit more complex or larger environment than my demo network. But the advantage is, for example, imagine in your on-premises environment on this site, you're running a beefy SQL Server, 16 cores, and I don't know, 64 gigabytes of RAM. But in case of recovery and disaster recovery, not all your users need to connect to that application. Nothing blocks you from classifying a smaller machine in Azure, because smaller in Azure means. Now, in meantime, the virtual machine should be available, I hope. Not yet. Not visible. I don't know. Let's try to refresh this. My failover plan was completed, so the virtual machine must be there. I think it's mainly the portal that's doing a little bit crazy because not even the menus are showing up again. Not that important. One last thing, I'm just going back to my slide deck and at the end, jump back to my machine, but somehow my portal is doing a little bit crazy. One of the last things, I was already talking about virtual machine states and building an equal virtual machine, specific machine in Azure or a bigger one or a smaller one. Now, the cool thing about Azure Site Recovery, besides it's, first of all, it's also easy to configure, is it's actually pretty cheap to use. Now, I know in an environment where you have 50 machines replicating to Azure, I mean, the Azure consumption bill will considerable as well, but it's the same in your existing environment. Now, the interesting part about the Azure Site Recovery cost is, first of all, it's a fixed cost of 200 euro, so that's close to $200 nowadays for using the service. So it's like a one-time cost. 50 euro, 50, 40 US dollar per virtual machine. And that's for using every service for that specific virtual machine. And that's it. So let's say in my environment, one Hyper-V host, one virtual machine. My most critical application in an SMB environment, for example, to fix per month 250 euro. That's so cheap because as long as the virtual machine is not running, then you're not consuming storage. You're not consuming computing power. And that's the reason why it's so cheap. And then calculating your full disaster recovery setup. You might need some work where, for example, like in my case, running the A2 virtual machine in Azure on a monthly basis 24/7 costs close to 70 euro. Now, in a disaster recovery scenario, I hope that my virtual machine in Azure doesn't need to run 24/7. It might run for a few hours, maybe one day, worst case, 2-3 days. And again, in my demo setup, my disaster recovery cost will be 200 to 50 for the virtual machine, and maybe, I don't know, 10% of the 70 euro. So for close to 7, 10, let's say even 100 euro, if it's a larger server, you have a virtual machine site recovery environment. Now, in the Azure portal, there's a calculator available that will help you in calculating the exact pricing. One last attempt for questions. Yep, so it's a fixed price per protected VM per month. That's correct. There's another question. Replication VM is not in production, but in sleeping. How do we compute costs? So, as I already explained, it's the fixed 200 euro, then the fixed euro per virtual machine. And as long as it's not running inside Azure, that's the only cost that's involved. Another question, do you have some links to compute the bandwidth needed for replication? I would need to check. I have to come back on that one. I know there's documentation available on the Azure application portal. I'm going to make sure that when the session is uploaded on Channel 9, that there's a slide at the end that's actually asking and answering those questions. Or as a comment on Channel 9, I have to check with Microsoft folks what's the easiest. One last attempt to check my virtual machines. I do have two virtual machines. That's already good. Available. And let's see if I can connect to my virtual machine. No, not attached. Connect. It's not there yet. Oh, it's a little bit slow in the portal. The important part is that my virtual machine is running. I showed you already before that it's shut down in my local environment. Let's see if it already has received an IP address based on my Azure virtual network. So it has an internal IP mapped to my public IP for some reason. Cannot connect through remote desktop, but it's not that important. It has an IP, it has the running state, it's consuming network connectivity, disk speed. So I hope you bear with me that you trust me that the machine is indeed working. So with that, we're right at the end. Timing is pretty good. So I started this session talking about what is disaster recovery. Think about my funny mapping with a light bulb. I talked about the existing Microsoft disaster recovery solutions, and then most of the session related to Azure site recovery. Again, think about my books, think about using Twitter, shouting out that you attended the best session ever, thanks to the Microsoft folks who are actually providing the infrastructure for this. We got like 5 minutes left for your most important questions. If not today, during the last few minutes, do not hesitate to send me an email. Do not hesitate to shout out on Twitter. Apparently, there's one question that's cool. My questions is following scenario supported. Say you have a virtual machine failover on-prem to Azure, then you delete the VM on-prem and failover from Azure to on-prem. That's actually a very good question. Is it supported? Yes, because it's relying on Hyper-V Azure site recovery replication. Now, the recovery itself won't be that easy, or meaning not that easy, doesn't mean that it's not possible. Now, during your failover process, will receive a lot of error messages, red messages in the portal, because it will tell you that your local virtual machine is not available anymore. And then there are two options. First option is forcing an unplanned failover from Azure to your local environment. Then it will recognize, oh, there's something missing in the data center, but I'm unplanned, so I'm going to force my replication. The second option, which in my opinion is a little bit more safe, is copying the PhD file that's running, that's available in Azure. So within the Azure portal, you go to your Azure storage component, then you connect to your storage components, and then you do a flat file copy of the VHD. The flat file copy is again available in your local data center environment, and then you perform the planned failover, because then it can replicate between the late state in Azure, replicating with a copied VHD in your local data center. And normally that one should be fine because it's the exact same disk state. So there's not a lot to replicate. Got like two options there. Second option, in my opinion, is the most safe one, meaning it's under control. You can actually see what's happening. And the second one, I mean, downloading your virtual machine, let's say even in my case, small Windows machine, the virtual machine disk size is close to 8 gigabytes. Like 6 hours on my internet connection to actually upload the machine. I know downloading is a lot faster. So it will take, I don't know, close to an hour maybe to your virtual machine during the failover process. So what already made me nervous during the failback process, that I was only seeing dots, it might take a few minutes, a few quarters, a few hours before the virtual machine is fully replicated back to your environment. But in short, it will work fine. The other person, thank you for the nice feedback. So with that, to make sure that I'm committing on time management, I would like to thank you for being in my session. Thank you for the ones who asked questions. And as visible on the slide, don't forget to go to the IBE Smart website where you can follow the other upcoming events. I know there's one coming in the next couple of days or weeks on the latest updates on System Center, and another one on other cool technology. So with that, I'm closing my mic. Thank you very much. Hope to see you or meet you somewhere in person. I can thank you again for attending my session. Have a nice day.